Hello, and welcome to the Soundwave Podcast, music, technologies, stories, for people who love the art and science of listening to and enjoying recorded music. Here it's all about the art and magic of sound reproduction and related human stories. We survey music, technology, and stories from the early beginnings of relatively low high fidelity to the heyday of the 70s high fidelity and the modern age of digital and streaming. I'm your host, Pat Shepard. Today's episode is the story of two wells, a groundbreaking book, a low-budget radio program in search of a lifeboat to stay alive, an innovative Halloween broadcast that nearly didn't happen, a groundbreaking woman sound effects innovator, a nation thrown into panic that wasn't real, two relatively new mediums competing for influence, and lessons delivered, but maybe not yet learned. War of the Worlds, the book, 40 years earlier. The book by H.G. Wells was first serialized in 1897 by Pearson's Magazine in the UK and by Cosmopolitan Magazine in the US. The novel's first appearance in hardcover was in 1898. It was written between 1895 and 1897. It is one of the earliest stories to detail a conflict between mankind and an extraterrestrial race. The novel is the first-person narrative of both an unnamed protagonist in Surrey and his younger brother in London as southern England is invaded by Martians. The novel has influenced the work of scientists, notably Robert H. Goddard, who, inspired by the book, helped develop both the liquid-fueled rocket and multi-stage rocket, which resulted in the Apollo 11 moon landing 71 years later. Looking for a new way. Breaking news-style approach. By the end of October 1938, Orson Welles' Mercury Theater on the air had been on CBS for 17 weeks. It was a low-budget program without a sponsor. The series had built a small but loyal following with fresh adaptations of literary classics. But for the week of Halloween, Wells wanted to do something very different from the Mercury's earlier offerings. Wells explained the approach like this. I had conceived the idea of doing a radio broadcast in such a manner that a crisis would actually seem to be happening and would be broadcast in such a dramatic form as to appear to be real, a real event taking place at that time, rather than a mere radio play. Wells had that idea before picking which book he wanted to use. He discussed various works of science fiction with the show's producer, John Houseman. They eventually landed on H.G. Wells' 1898 novel, The War of the Worlds. Apparently, Houseman doubted that Wells had ever even read it. Struggles to get this production done. The selection of War of the Worlds was then passed to recently hired Edward Koch, with the goal of retelling the story as a set of late-breaking news-style bulletins. Apparently, Koch did not like the book at all. He found it terribly dull and dated. Invading aliens from outer space was the stuff of 1930s comic books and pulp fiction. There had been the idea during the late 19th and early 20th centuries that there were canals on the planet Mars. These were a network of long, straight lines observed by astronomers using early telescopes without photography. Around the turn of the century, there was even speculation that they were engineering works, irrigation channels constructed by a civilization with intelligent aliens indigenous to Mars. By the early 20th century, improved astronomical observations revealed the canals to be optical illusions, and modern high-resolution mapping of the Martian surface by spacecraft now shows there's no such features. Even with the news broadcast-style approach, Koch struggled to turn the novel into a credible radio drama in less than a week. There was a lot of frantic scrambling and drama in the weeks leading up to the show. The final draft of the script was finished the night before rehearsals. Wells was not present due to other commitments, but the rehearsal was recorded on acetate discs for him to listen to later that night. This stripped-down production, with no music and almost no sound effects, was an absolute disaster. More frantic work on the script made it seem as though the broadcast proceeded in real time, as opposed to happening over several days as a series of news reports. All of the changes helped make the show much more believable, but some of the changes also removed some of the important clues that would help people understand that this was a dramatization. There was the opening disclaimer that the show was a work of fiction, but the then traditional 30-minute station identification break was pushed until 40 minutes into the show. In my opinion, one of the most compelling parts of the radio broadcast was the reporter who witnesses the Martian's arrival, played by Frank Reddick. Frank studied the recordings of the Hindenburg disaster broadcast over and over and really channeled the way Herbert Morrison's voice swelled in alarm and abject horror as a Hindenburg exploded into flame. Finally, Ora Nichols, head of the sound effects department at the CBS affiliate in New York, devised chillingly effective noises for the Martian war machines. Interesting, Nichols and Wells argued about how to produce the sound effects. Wells wanted to use actual sounds instead of mechanical imitations. At one point, Wells angrily called Nichols a screwball, and she threw off her headphones and walked out of the studio. With airtime rapidly approaching for the live broadcast, Wells quickly apologized and subsequently wrote Nichols a note saying, "Dearest Ora, thanks for the best job anyone could ever do for anybody. All my love, Orson." That was a while after the broadcast. Among the techniques that Ora Nichols invented were the use of an egg beater next to the microphone to mimic a lawnmower, chopping cabbage into a wicker basket to sound like decapitation, twisting a cast iron pan lid to evoke the door opening of an alien spaceship, and removing jelly-covered gloves from her hand to imitate aliens turning them inside out. The aftermath. No real panic, but reported as real panic. Because the first part of the show pushed past the 30-minute mark, no one in Mercury realized that the listeners who tuned in late and missed the opening announcements would have to wait almost 40 minutes for a disclaimer explaining that the show was fiction. Radio audiences had come to expect that fictional programs would be interrupted on the half hour for station identification. Breaking news, on the other hand, failed to follow those rules. People who believed the broadcast to be real would be even more convinced when the station break failed to come at 8:30 p.m. Headlines in the newspapers the next day proclaimed, "Fake radio war stirs terror through the U.S. or "Radio plays terrifies the nation." Even the New York Times stated, "Radio listeners in panic, taking war drama as fact." There is now a fair amount of research by historian A. Brad Schwartz and others who've reported the scope of the panic in the past decade that shows the infamous newspaper reporting of the panic was far overblown. In the nation of about 130 million people, fewer than 50 Americans were panicked enough to flee outside. How many people were spooked by anxious telephone calls from friends and family rather than the broadcast? We may never know. So how did the story of panic listeners begin? Many now lay blame on America's newspapers. You see, radio had siphoned off advertising revenue from the print media during the Depression, badly damaging the newspaper industry. So the papers seized on the opportunity presented by Wells' program to discredit radio as a source of news. The newspaper industry sensationalized the panic to prove to advertisers and regulators that radio management was irresponsible and not to be trusted. In an editorial titled "Terror by Radio," the New York Times reproached radio officials for approving the interweaving of blood-curdling fiction with news flashes offered in exactly the same manner as real news would have been given. So to wrap up, the story of the War of the Worlds 1938 radio broadcast is fascinating in so many ways. We got a glimpse into the real-life drama surrounding the production of the show. We got to see how the show almost didn't make it to the airwaves, and how Ora Nichols, a groundbreaking woman innovator's sound effects, were an integral part of the production. We learned that fake news style of the War of the Worlds dramatization led to some real fake news reporting by newspapers attempting to hold on to their slipping influence. Maybe we have not learned the lesson both radio and newsprint were trying to tell us in their own ways. Listener, beware. There is a lot of power in the media, and if people don't multi-source and research information they base their actions on, there can be terrible real-world ramifications, such as the infamous and tragic U.S. January 6th insurrection led by the Big Lie and groups like QAnon. If you want to understand those events, just follow the trail of money and power. You can easily see that there was, and still is, an attempt to hold on to power, money, and influence. The amount of power media, and now internet, has to mislead people for nefarious purposes was foreshadowed by the fake news print reporting of the panic after War of the Worlds radio drama. Well, I hope you found this podcast to be very interesting. I would like to invite you to go to thesoundwaveshow.com, my webpage, where you can find a bunch of links to different resources I used in this podcast. And I really look forward to the next podcast. Please stay tuned, and thank you very much for listening. All content is copyright thesoundwaveshow.com, except where otherwise noted. The theme song is something I put together in GarageBand. See you next time.